Welcome to the Mike Malloy Show. Peter Werby sitting in for Mike once again. Mike and Kathy and little Molly off on a vacation. I'll be doing the show tonight and also tomorrow night, and then Mike and the crew will be back on Monday. This is the Nova M Radio Network. Our call-in number is 800-989-1480. I'm sitting here sweating in an air studio in Detroit that probably is between 80 and 85 degrees, but I suppose it just, I don't know, gets the juices going. You can get the juices going, too. Give us a call, 800-989-1480. And got a lot going tonight. At the half hour in this hour, we're going to be talking with Patrick Meckel. Let me see his name here. McElwee, that's right. Patrick Meckelwee. I better do better than this when I get to him on the air. Patrick McElwee, there we go. He's from, and then, here's where the laughter stops, friends. He's from the group called Just Foreign Policy. You can get a heads up by going to that ahead of time, justforeignpolicy.org. They've just released a study that says perhaps as many as a million Iraqis have died as a result of Bush's illegal invasion and occupation of Iraq. It's just a terrible story. But these are the kind of stories that you expect on our network that you don't get anywhere else. It's going to be a while, probably, you know, 6 months they'll bring this all up, right? 10 o'clock, well, this is Eastern time, second hour, let's call it that. We're going to join Annie Laurie Gaylor. She's one of the founders of the Freedom From Religion Foundation. Again, a heads up ahead of time at ffrf.org. And we'll talk about some of the church-state issues, including the fact that universities are installing footbaths for the benefit of Muslim students and what that's all about. And in the final hour, I'm going to talk about that old bugaboo of talk radio, abortion. More awful stuff from the compulsory pregnancy people. I mean, can you believe they've actually gotten away with calling themselves pro-life? Pro-life? They are so anti-life, aren't they? We're pro-life. They're the compulsory pregnancy movement. Well, we will get to that. One of the things, if you want to go to my website, it's Peter Werby, W-E-R-B as in boy, peterwerby.com. And one of the things I promised you, since so many of you callers accommodated me by sending me the URL, the web link for the Chicken Hawk database. These are a listing of that pack of frauds that the conservatives are, who are always pro-war. They were way, some of them that are in their 60s, for instance, and late 50s, were, they supported the Vietnam War, big time. But they also supported other people fighting it, big time. They had other things to do. They had career paths, just like Mitt Romney now, right? His kids, his five sons could all fill in the problem that the armies have in meeting some of its quotas. They say they think they're going to be able to meet it for August, particularly since they're offering people 20,000. Is it all going to be all mercenary? I mean, there's almost 120,000 mercenaries there now, contractors, they call them. They should just call them mercenaries. I mean, somehow or other, they dropped that, though. And there's been about 1,000 casualties, deaths among them, and thousands more of the wounded, but that never gets reported. Let's see. Yeah, what do I have on my website? The Iraqi death toll from Bush's monstrous war reaches 1 million. I mean, that's one-sixth of a Holocaust. And, you know, and people get upset. You know, how can you compare him to Hitler? Well, all right. I mean, he's on the way, though, isn't he? Here's five words. Now, listen, I want to say these five words, and please don't turn the dial, okay? Because you're going to say, whoa, I'm out of here. I don't want to listen to this guy anymore. Here's five words I've never uttered before in my life. Well, I mean, in the last 7 years. So, but let me clean it up before you leave the radio dial here. Five words I've never said before. I agree with George Bush. Oh, wait a minute now. How can that be? Every time the man opens his mouth, at best, at absolute best, he's saying something utterly stupid. And at worst, and the vast majority of the time, he's lying. He's a prevaricator, right? He lies. He's a compulsive liar, as are all those neoconservatives. I mean, they wouldn't know. I mean, if they say it's Thursday, I'm going to check the calendar, right? And that may be, if they start talking to you, if you listen to some of these far right wing talk shows, that's the only truth you get. It's a Thursday here on the blah blah show, right? Then it's all lies. Now, I know some of you listen to these right wing shows. Oh, I haven't even told you why I agree with them, but sorry, I get a little, it's easy for me to get distracted. But I'll just say this quickly. I know some of you listen to these right wing shows and you say, oh, I got to know what the enemy's saying. Somehow I find out, and I never listen to these people, because I'll turn on, and I don't even like to say any of their names, even though they're you know, everyone knows who they are. But like the big guy, you know, the dope addict, the OxyContin addict, who, you know, like because he's a rich white guy, doesn't do any time like poor people or African Americans would. But he starts talking. And he starts off with a premise contained in a clause. And I think, well, that's not true. And then he's on to, you know, a couple more clauses. And that's a lie. And that's a lie. And that's a lie. And I listen for 2.5 minutes. And my head is hurting. My head is splitting trying to think of how could I possibly refute this? Because people will say to me, hey, a conservative friend of mine or family member said to me, blah, 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 blah. You know, and they say, what do you think I should say? And I say, I think you should say goodbye, you know, good night or good morning, whatever time of the day it is. Because here in Detroit, there is a saying that if you're standing on a corner talking to a fool, the passerby can't tell who the fool is, right? And in terms of listening audience, you're counted just like all these ditto heads. Ditto heads. Can you imagine that? Can you imagine anybody listening to the Mike Malloy show or my show, Peter Werby, in Detroit, and someone calling themselves a ditto head? I mean, these people are, they're blockheads. They're lunkheads. They bring absolutely nothing to any of the programs. If you do listen, forget about this awful, mean-spirited, lying host that's sitting up there in front of a microphone on a right-wing show. And listen to the callers. They bring absolutely nothing to the program whatsoever. You folks collectively know 10 times more than I do. Many of you know as much as I do. I probably should not be too modest and say some of you know just individually as much as I mean, but it's a village here of knowledge. So when I don't know something, you're just right there with it. Or I learn stuff from you folks all the time. The email that you send me turns me on to so many different things. By the way, if you want to send me email, you can send it to calltalkyes, calltalkyes@yahoo.com. And I'm just working this gig by myself, so I can't really get through them all. But every morning, if I haven't read them on the air or whatever, and that's only a few of them, I do read them. All right. I agree with George Bush. How? He held a press conference today, whew, right, and talked about everything under the sun. He was talking about Iran's role in Iraq. He started getting nervous again, right, about the U.S. Doing a strike of some sort against Iran. I mean, don't you think they're a little upset that the United States has come 6,000-8,000 miles away and is carrying on a war on both their borders, on their eastern border in Iraq and on their western border in Afghanistan? Well, you would think that they'd have some concern of the outcome, like the United States does not win militarily there, because then they'd have this hostile imperial force right on their border. So one can imagine in real politics, in the politics of the world, why Iran would, what do they always say, messing around? And they always got these little phrases like that. I mean, it's the U.S. that has intervened in a country, in their region. Usually in regions, there's a hegemony. There's a dominant power. We're like the big bear in this hemisphere. But the United States, Bushco, this racket posing as a government, wants to be the big bear in the Middle East as well. And it almost is, if you think about it, Iran and Syria. That's it. Okay. Press conference, the bridge collapse in Minnesota, the death of Pat Tillman, the home mortgage market has collapsed, and the stock market, that great crapshoot, has dropped about 380 points. Also, the closing of Guantanamo, lots of other stuff. All right. So where do I agree with George W. Bush? Maybe I should... You know what? this is a little trick. If I string this out far enough, I will, and you'll have to come back. That's a grabber or a holder. You know. Okay. See, here comes the music. So you're going to have to come back and listen why Someone on the Mike Malloy Show, me, Peter Werby, is saying, I agree with George W. Bush. Also, I'm going to mention in regard to that, how 24 words might end the occupation of Iraq. In any event, you give us a call, 800-989-1480. Peter Werby here with you on the Mike Malloy Show on the Nova M Radio Network. This is the Mike Malloy Show. Peter Werby sitting in for Mike, broadcasting from Detroit, where we usually don't play Bare Naked Ladies, the band there. This is a rock and roll town, but Ian Huff is he's choosing the music there in Phoenix. So I'm going to put that off on you, Ian, okay? By the way, if you want to find out a little more about me, one place, as I said, was my website, Peter Werby, W-E-R-B-E.com, but also MySpace.com. I got dragged into the 21st century by my co-host here in Detroit. So it's MySpace.com/NightCallDetroit. All right. So I was holding you all in suspense. Why I said those five words I never said before, I agree with George Bush. And this is in regard to his press conference today. And that is where he said that he does not support, he dismissed the idea of raising the federal gasoline excise tax to pay for the structurally deficient bridges. About 70,000 of them are like that. And the idea was that we need more money. We have to produce more revenue. And this was, I guess, the Democratic chairman of the House Transportation Committee proposed a 5-cent increase to the already 18.3 cents a gallon that would establish a new trust fund. And so doesn't that sound good? Doesn't that sound great? No, listen, read my lips, or I guess you can't. Who said that? It was his daddy, right? Listen, we have squandered so much in this country, the fortune that all of us have participated in producing at work, at the labor that we do, and it's been skimmed off by these rackets like Bush is running to give it away to their buddies in the war industries and the attendant companies. You know, they got one group that destroys everything, then another group that's going to build it back up. But, I mean, it's everything. Tax breaks. I mean, Bush now talking about lowering the tax rate on corporations. Give me a break. It ought to be going the other way. Anyways, I agree 100% with George W. Bush. I mean, someone's like taping this, and they're going to play this segment for me only. No new taxes at all. Tax cuts. Oh, well, wait a minute. Tax cuts for the ordinary person. Tax increases, extraordinary tax increases for the ultra-wealthy. Something like over 10 million confiscatory taxes. I love that word. I mean, the conservatives say that. They're, you know, when the Democrats will say, maybe we should put the taxes up like a 0.5%. And these right-wingers say, you know, it's class war. Well, it is class war. And that's what they've been practicing against us for a generation, maybe for the history of government, but for sure over the last generation or so. We've gotten nowhere as the middle class and the working class, and the ultra-wealthy have gotten wealthier and wealthier and wealthier. And it's a pathological greed. They got more than they can ever spend. So what we need, income, wealth, whatever, they get $10 million. And, oh, that's their word, too, confiscatory taxes. In other words, we're confiscating their wealth. I hate to tell them this, but it's all social wealth. It takes a village or whatever the, you know, hell you want to phrase it like that. So what we need is an extraordinary tax increase on the people that have excess wealth, that have concentrated wealth, that is concentrated so that they are a plutocracy. That was a word 100 years ago that people like us used to describe who ruled America then, the ultra wealthy. They knew the robber barons and called them by their names, had no respect for them, knew they were their class enemy. Like, these people are the enemy of the middle class, these ultra wealthy in our class, in our country, and they're the enemy of the working class. They know. They know that, and they have all their commandantes in the war against us. They rule us. They fool us. They've got a million little tricks up their sleeve to keep the equation of wealth and poverty, of ruled and rulers, intact. And when we say, well, you know, could we maybe raise the minimum wage to $7 or something like that? They go crazy. Again, it's class war. Well, I'm ready to be a commandante in the class war against the rich, because they're ruining the possibilities, not just for people in this country, but throughout the world. If you look at the travail, at the problems, at the horrible situations that exist in terms of poverty and hunger and disease and wars, and so many wars, this is something that all could be altered by a massive redistribution of wealth, because it is the billions and billions of people in the world that have created the trillions of dollars that are concentrated into the hands of a few men across the world in each country, and that dominate the politics and dominate the economy of the world. And, I mean, you know, half of it's a big crapshoot anyways. You look what happened today with this big drop in the in the stock market here. I mean, you know, remember Mr. Natural from R. Crumb Comics? He said, is this a system? Well, yeah. I mean, how can we have the wealth to the extent that we have, and yet having, I think it's something like 30,000 people a year starve to death, and have a war where now it looks like maybe as many as a million people have died, Iraqis, where our deaths of Americans may turn out to be a small footnote of the real victims of Bush's monstrous war. All right, we got a guest when we come back. His name's Patrick McElwain. He's from the group Just Foreign Policy. We'll talk to him. Peter Werby's my name on the Mike Malloy Show on the Nova M Radio Network. We'll be right back. Welcome back to the Mike Malloy Show. It's Peter Werby sitting in for Mike on the Nova M Radio Network. Our call-in number, 800-989-1480. That's music from Bruce Springsteen, part of his Seeger tapes, a live version of Pete Seeger's Bring 'Em Home. And that was, I didn't realize, that was from, in fact, I thought that was a Bruce song, but actually Pete Seeger wrote it in 1965, and here we are, 42 years later, and still talking about the same problem. We know in excruciating detail and exact numbers how many U.S. casualties that the United States has suffered because of Bush's illegal invasion and occupation of Iraq. And yet the statistics for how many Iraqis have suffered because of this dirty deed are extraordinarily speculative. I think officially you still hear them in the tens of thousands. Well, I came across today something from the organization called Just Foreign Policy. You can go to justforeignpolicy.org. That those figures are staggeringly high, and I'll let our guest tell you about it. Our guest is Patrick McElwee. He's a policy analyst with Just Foreign Policy. He's worked as a policy analyst with the Center for Economic and Policy Research and has worked and studied in France, Haiti, and Mexico. He's fluent in Spanish and has a working knowledge of French and Haitian Creole. And let's greet him on the Mike Malloy Show. Peter Werby here with you. Patrick McElwee, thanks for joining me.
Well, thank you for having me.
Yeah. Give us this figure. This is almost the kind of word you'd use, unbelievable, about. The Iraqi death toll may be as high, according to your extrapolations, your study, as what?
1 million Iraqi deaths so far.
And what officially? I know the United States coming in said, we don't do body counts. That's right. And so who does?
Well, effectively, no one does. I mean, there's no official estimate of the Iraqi deaths. The Iraqi government does some estimates, but they're very politically based. And actually, they've stopped issuing them because they were getting too high and they didn't like them. But even the ones they were issuing were far lower than what we know to be much more accurate.
Now, The Lancet, the British medical journal, said there was as many as 600,000. Let me see. When Lancet published the estimate, George Bush said 600,000 or whatever they guessed at is just it's not credible.
Right.
And of course, now you have a figure that's 40% higher. Maybe take us back to the Lancet study. How does one figure out in a chaotic country like that how many people have perished?
Well, there's actually an established international way to figure out how many people have died in a place like Iraq. It happens all the time around the world after natural disasters and man-made disasters. The United Nations or another team of researchers will go in and do what's called a cluster survey. And that's what the researchers at Johns Hopkins did last year. They did a cluster survey, and it's basically a statistical method to determine how many Iraqis have died since the invasion and who wouldn't have died had the death rate before the invasion continued. And what they found was that 650,000 Iraqis, as of July 2006, so over a year ago, had died as a result of the U.S. invasion. Our numbers effectively just piggybacking on what they did. We're basically extrapolating from their survey, pointing out that a full year has passed since they made their estimate and that Iraqis have unfortunately continued to die at very atrocious rates.
So this doesn't, though, look at responsibility because, of course, there's a lot of Iraqis killing Iraqis. And is it possible to sort out how much of this is because of United States military acts and how much is from other causes? I mean, I'm sure people are having problems that are beyond just military because of the invasion. The public health situation is atrocious.
That's right. So this number that I'm citing, a million Iraqis killed, that's Iraqis killed from violence from all sources. So not just coalition soldiers or coalition airplanes, but also Iraqis killing Iraqis, other foreign fighters who might be in Iraq. I think that's probably a smaller number than is made out by some people. And there would be even a higher number of people, that's right, who died because they can't get the right medical care because the hospital system isn't working properly, or who are getting sick in the first place because the water system isn't working properly. But that's not included in what we're doing here.
Yeah. Now, these figures are staggering because you're talking about a country that now I'm even forgetting the population. Is it 20 million?
It's a little under 27 million.
27 million. And you have millions of people that have left the country, millions of people that are internal refugees, and now when you talk about extrapolating, for every death, there's also an attendant number of injuries that people suffer in military situations as well. So this is horrendous. This is it's almost incomprehensible. I mean, I was talking to a friend of mine that I was going to interview you, and we were talking about the recent death of a friend of ours and what impact it had on us. and how many concentric circles were created because of the death of this person. And when you start getting to figures like this, this is not only a physical trauma, but it must be this emotional trauma of incredible proportions.
That's right. I mean, it's hard to get our minds around a number like a million people have died. I think one way to do it is to compare it to other atrocities that have captured the public attention. For example, in 1994, the Rwandan genocide captured a lot of attention. Now, estimates of deaths in the Rwandan genocide hover around 650,000. So we're talking about more than that, considerably more than that. We're talking about matching that last year when The Lancet did their study.
Mm-hmm. Patrick McElwee is my guest on the Mike Malloy Show. I'm Peter Werby talking with him, and he is a policy analyst with Just Foreign Policy. Their website is justforeignpolicy.org, and they just released a survey that says that is more than a million people have died. In this release that I got from my friends at the Institute for Public Accuracy, the count, as you show it, when this was released was 999,987. But on your website, there's a counter, so it's increasing. And is this just mathematical, or this is not reported deaths, or is it?
Well, this is coming from basically. In order to do the extrapolation, we didn't just assume that the rate that prevailed last year, for example, prevailed this year as well. We realized that the number of deaths, the rate of death could be going up or going down in Iraq, depending on how conditions are varying. So we're actually using a database of media-reported deaths that's maintained by Iraq Body Count. And so they're putting into their database every death in Iraq that's reported by at least two English-language sources. And the theory here is that while the media can't come close to reporting all the deaths in Iraq, they can't do it because they're confined to small zones of safe passage, and even just because it's a superhuman task. There's no centralized reporting mechanism in Iraq currently.
Mm-hmm.
But the theory is that the media is at least picking up roughly the same percentage of deaths in Iraq, so that if this month twice as many Iraqis died as last month, then the media would pick up twice as many, and vice versa. If it had been half, the media would pick up half.
Well, the media gives scant attention to these kind of figures anyways. I think there was in the mainstream media some attention to this Lancet study, the English Medical Journal, that over 600,000 Iraqis had died. But it didn't play. In other words, that the deaths that are being inflicted because of the U.S. illegal invasion and occupation is never mentioned as a factor on a regular basis. I mean, we're concerned, the concern of the U.S. media is simply reporting U.S. deaths of armed forces deaths, right?
And the Lancet report was largely ignored. I mean, the same week it came out, George Bush had a press conference and he said 35,000 Iraqis had died, mm-hmm. and that number was, I'm sure, reported more than a scientifically based number of the Lancet. And Iraq is the only case that I know of where this has been the case. I mean, for example, in Darfur, the number of 200,000 Sudanese who have been killed in Darfur is accepted by the Bush administration and by most of the media. And that number comes from a cluster survey conducted by the United Nations, just like Johns Hopkins' report in The Lancet.
Well, you know, there's besides the human tragedy, which is overwhelmingly the most important aspect, I mean, there also is an ethical component. And Noam Chomsky, the social theorist, he said that the absolute lack of knowledge that Americans have about civilian deaths during the Vietnam War, which was about 3 million, and routinely, if you ask people, they look blank, like they never thought of it in their lives, and they'll say 200,000. And he said this is like asking a German today how many Jews and other people died in the Nazi concentration camps, and having them tell you a figure like that. Well, we're out of time. People can see more about this at the Just Foreign Policy website. It's their name, justforeignpolicy.org. My guest has been Patrick McElwee from the group. I want to thank you for bringing this horrendous bit of information to us. It's important that we know this. Thank you so much for joining me.
Well, thank you for having me and discussing this.
All right. All right, folks, we will be back. We're going to return and get your calls. We haven't gotten one in yet. You can be the first, 800-989-1480. Peter Werby on the Mike Malloy Show. This is Nova M Radio Network. That's what we got to do. We got to shake it up. That's what we do on the Mike Malloy Show, even when Mike's away, as he is. Peter Werby from Detroit, shaking it all up. You too at the Nova M Radio Network. Call in number 800-939-1480. Kathy writes into calltalkyes@yahoo.com. Isn't Sam Cedar sitting in for Mike on Monday? I checked, and that, in fact, is the case. So that is correct. Let me see here. I got to switch screens here. There's some open lines for you too, and we'll get you at the top of the hour for that. But call in now. We'll get you ready. Ian Huff, who's pressing all the buttons at our headquarters in Phoenix. During the break. We talk about music. Here's a little repression here, a little censorship, if you will. This is from the Houston Chronicle. Lyrics performed by Pearl Jam criticizing President Bush should not have been censored from a webcast by AT&T, according to a company spokesman. AT&T, through its Blue Room Entertainment site, offered a webcast of the band's headlining performance Sunday at Lollapalooza in Chicago. The event was shown with a brief delay so the company could bleep out excessive profanity or nudity. If any of you ever gone to Lollapalooza, there is some of that, particularly the profanity from the stage. But, hey, it's the 21st century. Even Republicans swear now, I think. But monitors hired by AT&T through a vendor went further and cut two lines from a song to the tune of Pink Floyd's Another Brick in the Wall. I was attempting to sing it for Ian back at the network, but it didn't work. So I'm just going to have to, you know, when they say, hey, teacher, leave those kids alone, right? Well, Pearl Jam, the band from Seattle, now almost a classic band. They were cutting edge, right? Now in the 90s, early 90s or something, but now they're almost classic rock. But so they were doing Another Brick in the Wall, and they substituted the lines with George Bush, leave this world alone. And the second time it was sung, and they said, George Bush, find yourself another home, according to the band's website. AT&T spokesman Michael Coe said that the silencing was a mistake and that the company was working with the vendor that produces the webcast to avoid future misunderstandings. He said AT&T was working to secure the rights to post the entire song, part of a sing-along with the audience, on the Blue Room site. So they're trying to make up for it. Okay. Do we have time? Yeah, I could get this little piece. And more censorship. This is from Kent, Ohio. A soft-spoken teacher posted the words, impeach Bush in a public garden. And Kent police cast him as an outlaw. Today, Kevin Egler is fighting that in Kent Municipal Court. And the case is emerging as a free speech issue of interest well beyond the boundaries of Placid Portage County. Did I say this is from the Cleveland Plain Dealer, the daily newspaper there? Egler said the officer who cited him on July 1st asked, why don't you put the signs in your own yard? Egler said his response was that he's a taxpayer and views the public space very much as his yard. Egler and about a dozen friends and associates have placed hundreds of anti-war messages around Ohio and neighboring states over the past 10 months. He said the effort is fueled by the notion that President Bush's military response after the 9/11 terrorist attacks was both illegal and immoral. The ticket in Kent represents the first serious legal challenge to the campaign, Egler said. He said he was ticketed for littering in Columbus after a sign he placed on a bridge blew over. Egler said that when he was stopped in Kent, he asked the police officer how his sign differed from realtors posting signs on public property saying, "This way to the house for sale." He said the officer asked, "You don't know the difference?" but never explained what it might be. Columbus attorney Bob Fitrakis. Now, Bob Fitrakis, oh, it explains who he is here a little later on. Egler's lawyer said there is a difference. The real estate sign is a commercial speech, and Egler's sign is political. Commercial messages do not have anywhere near the legal protections that political speech does, including, according to Fitrakis. Fitrakis does extensive legal work on First Amendment issues and is the publisher of the nationally recognized online publication freepress.org, which I would highly recommend. It's co-edited with my old pal Harvey Wasserman, who some of you may know. If you don't know who he is, Google him, too. And Fitrakis said this is the first Ohio case of its kind that he has heard of, because most prosecutions for political signs occur when someone defaces a building with paint or graffiti, but not a freestanding, easily removable sign until now. But Ohio politicians, including judges running for re-election, get a great deal of latitude when it comes to posting their campaign signs. And Fitrakis said he is not aware of any instance in which a mainstream politician has been hunted down and prosecuted for the act. Well, it's pure political discrimination, and it's in that regard, it's repression, it's censorship. But I don't know. I mean, I may part a little bit of company here. The public space being filled with political signs, I got to tell you, I hate that. Now, I have a political sign on my lawn. My lawn sign says "Troops home now," as any number of people do throughout my area in the suburbs of Detroit. But when it comes election time, and all over the public easement, all over the meridians, all over every public space, it's vote for this person and vote for this proposition. I got to tell you, I find that offensive. I find that a blight. And whereas I certainly accept the political message of Kevin Egler, impeach Bush, I think it's a good idea. You can go to, what's a good website? Impeachforpeace.org. Impeachforpeace.org is a good place to take a look at impeachment efforts. But, and I have to say, I think if I saw impeach Bush on a sign on a public, public easement, I wouldn't be too offended. But ultimately, I don't know, I could keep it clear pretty easily. All right, we're going to take our top of the hour break here on the Mike Malloy Show. Peter Werby's subbing for Mike. And when we come back, we're going to talk more about public space. This about religion in the public square. The conservatives say we're trying to kick religion out of the public square. I don't know about anyone else, but I am. I'll tell you about that when I come back. You want to call in the meantime, 800-989-1480. We'll get you on the air. Welcome to the Mike Malloy Show on the NovaM Radio Network. Peter Werby's sitting in for Mike tonight and tomorrow as well. Our call-in number, 800-989-1480. I guess we haven't taken any callers yet, so it's not encouraging. This is a phone-in talk show, and we're going to have a guest at the bottom of the hour, so if you call right now, we'll get you on the air. My email address here is calltalkyes@yahoo.com. My website, Peter Werby, W-E-R-B-E.com. I give that several times because a lot of the things we talk about are going to be on that site. When we left this hour, I was telling you about the situation in Kent, Ohio, where a man, Kevin Egler, was arrested in Kent for putting up a sign on public property that said, impeach Bush. then it's clear that he was discriminated against, because if there is a political sign, you know, elect judge so-and-so or elect this guy, you know, nothing happens to them, of course. But I said I would prefer to have all of this gone from the public space, because particularly around election time, it's this blight. It's this absolute blight of these signs. And for a minute, I thought during the top of the hour break that maybe we just should let that go. Let everything, you know, this is part of the democratic process. This is part of speech and all that. But, you know, public space, the public square should be neutral. Absolutely neutral, because we have people in our communities with such a varying and differing degrees of beliefs and philosophies and politics and all that. And I don't want to be confronted with religious stuff. I don't want to be confronted with political ideas I didn't believe in. I mean, think many of you live in regions that if you're a liberal or a progressive or a leftist, you're in the, you know, teeny minority. And think how that makes you feel. Well, I suspect when you live in an area like I do that is heavily democratic and very liberal and very tolerant, and where, you know, integrated and it's a heavily gay population and what have you, you know, if you're some right-wing conservative, you probably feel under assault. Well, we say, I don't care about them. But, you know, we should in many ways. But this brings us to something that we're going to talk about at the bottom of the hour and in general. One of the things, I like to use the language of the right wing, like I said at the beginning of the show, when they talk about us wanting to tax the rich properly so that they're paying the freight instead of the middle class and the working class, so that you can't afford it, they call it confiscatory taxes, taxes that would confiscate the wealth. And I said, I'm all for that. I love the word confiscatory taxes. Yeah, take about 90% of their wealth. You know, they don't need it. They don't use it. They just use it for control and just, you know, it's pathological greed. Well, the same thing, these conservatives, the religious conservatives, say that we, people like us, are trying to kick religion out of the public square, to which I say, yes, in fact, I like that phrase very much. I am indeed, because it's not like they need the public square. They've got all these places. They're called churches and synagogues and mosques and temples and everything under the sun. They're everywhere. They're everywhere. Everywhere you look, they got some place of worship, and they're always trying to intervene into the public square. Well, if you've looked, oh, do I have this handy? Let me see here. Oh, my little document. I did. Good grab across the room here. The Bill of Rights says, remember the First Amendment? And we say to people, what is the First Amendment all about? And they say, oh, it guarantees us freedom of speech and freedom of press and the right to peacefully assemble and petition the government. That's not the number one thing that the Founding Fathers listed. The first thing in the First Amendment, many of you know this, Congress shall make no law respecting an establishment of religion. That was their big fear, because they knew the disastrous results of intertwining the political state with religion. And you want one nation under God? I think it's called Iran, or it was called the Taliban in Afghanistan. And we have our own Taliban, as people have made the point. Well, it starts to creep in slowly. And here's one little bit that is happening around our town, in Dearborn, Michigan, the home of Ford Motor Company. And what has happened is universities have been installing these footbaths for Muslim students. About 10% of the students at the University of Michigan at Dearborn are Muslims. And as part of the ritual ablutions, you know, bathing, required before their 5 times a day prayers, and they were washing their feet in the sink. So the people say, oh, we know I'm doing that, so we're going to take thousands and thousands of student money or state money, and I don't know about your state, but Michigan is having lots of problems funding its universities, to the point where tuition keeps getting raised more and more and more. But, my $25,000 foot-washing station in several restrooms. So this is incredible. So this isn't just one. So I say no to that, and no to all religious displays in public. I like the idea in France, in schools. You can't wear headscarves, you can't wear big crosses, you can't wear big stars of David or anything. Because look, besides the tendency of religion to overcome the state, and people have said both are corrupted, the state and the religion historically have become corrupted when they're intertwined, think about the religious conflicts. Look at Northern Ireland, right? Look at Iraq and what's going on. If religion has a place, it has absolutely zero place in my life. But I know enough people who I have great respect for and do great work in the world that use religion in the best way possible. Most people throughout history have used religion in the worst way possible, is my estimation. But anyway, what you think of that? What should we have a neutral public square? I say yes. And in about 20 minutes or half an hour, we're going to be talking with Annie Laurie Gaylor, and she's from the Freedom From Religion Foundation. You want to get a heads up before time, FFRF.org. Let's go to our our phones. That's what they're called. Sorry. Here's Bill listening in Cleveland, Ohio on the internet. Bill, it's Peter Werbe in for Mike Malloy on the NovaM Radio Network. Hi.
How you doing, Peter?
Good, good.
I got to tell you a story about this business about the signs and political signs and so forth.
Yeah.
And I know that they seem to be a blight. And communities across the country kind of feel like you. They think it looks terrible, and they try to put limits on it. Now, this is what happened to me back in 2003. A community near here, I popped up a sign for my favorite candidate,
mm-hmm.
and it was on my mom's lawn for about a week. And the city came by and said, "You have to take that sign down, ma'am."
Boo.
And she's like, "Why?" She goes, "Well, you have to put down a $50 deposit, and you're only allowed to put it up 30 days before the election. You have to take it down 10 days after the election, and if all your signs are down, then we'll give you $25 back."
No, that's terrible. You know what I would do if I was your neighbor? I'd put up a sign.
Well, what I did was, my mom, she freaked out. She's like, "What?" So I called the ACLU of Cleveland, the ACLU of Ohio.
Yeah.
And they faxed back, "We need your ordinance." Then the city faxed them the ordinance, and they said, you can't do this.
Right.
And they said, "This is a political free speech. You can't charge for it, and you can't put time limits on it." And I even did some digging around. In 2000, there was this giant, Ohio Supreme Court decision. A law firm in Painesville, Ohio, which is east of Cleveland.
All right, well, let's not get too far afield on this.
Yeah,
is there a difference in your mind, Bill, between my lawn, which I said has a sign on it to say "Troops Out Now," and the prohibitions against putting it on public property, public easements?
Well, I think, I've worked for a lot of campaigns and put out a lot of signs. And we put signs up everywhere, but then it's our job and duty to make sure that they're picked up the day after the election.
Yeah, you know what?
And to just put them out willy-nilly, I almost got arrested for sticking a sign out in front of a polling place.
Yeah, well, that will happen. All right, thank you for your opinion.
I just wanted to clarify, the free speech thing about, if somebody hassles you about it during election time, call your ACLU.
Okay, thank you so much. Appreciate it.
Thanks, Peter.
All right, maybe we do need some law on this, because is that permissible on public property during the election cycle? I still don't like the idea. Here's Christian in listening on the Quake in San Francisco. Welcome to the Mike Malloy Show. Peter Werbe here with you. Hey.
Hello.
Hi, you're on the air. Go ahead. Yeah.
Well, you and I agree on a few things. We disagree. Well, we have a different approach about things. I do agree there is a time and place for everything under the sun. Oh, whoops. Sorry, I just quoted Ecclesiastes 3. Sorry about that.
You did.
But I was raised in Oakland, and I was inundated with the liberal agenda growing up in schools. I was taught how to put a condom on a banana, and I was taught liberal revisionist history.
What good does putting a condom on a banana do? Never mind. Only kidding. Go ahead.
It's all essential to the liberal agenda. But what I'm saying here,
that's my agenda. That's one of that. That's number three. Put condoms on all bananas.
Sure. Yeah. No.
Okay. Yeah.
You're right. But what I'm saying is that I have a different approach. My approach is, I'm inundated with an agenda growing up in the Bay Area, now living in L.A. And the difference between you and me is that I don't let stuff like that get to me. I don't feel intimidated by the left shoving their views down my throat via the media, the schools, academia, Congress, and
why would you when the opposite is true?
I don't feel threatened by it because is not my battle. And
you shouldn't feel threatened, Christian, because the dominant political cultural force in this country, it's a little mixed, but the dominant political force is certainly way right wing.
I really wonder about that because, in my opinion, you guys own, and with respect, sir, you guys own at least five of the six branches of government, the Congress, the Supreme Court, the media, academia, and entertainment. Now, you
all right, listen, Christian, hold on. I got to go to a break. Let's leave it at that. I won't even answer you. We'll let some callers do that. All right, thank you so much. Hey, is he right? We own everything. The liberals, 800-989-1480. Come on back. All right. Hey, I'm not picking the songs, folks. Peter Werby and the Mike Malloy Show on the Nova M Radio Network. Call-in number is 800-989-1480. I just looked at my email at calltalkyes@yahoo.com. No, I did not put Christian from L.A. up to the last call. He contended, obviously a conservative. He said he didn't mind that the public square was not neutral, and he said because he's a conservative, but it's all liberal, that all six branches of government, I can't remember all the ones that he mentioned, but the normal ones, I guess he missed the presidency. And I didn't get a chance to answer, so I thought it's a dirty job sometimes being a talk show host. But we could share this. So let's go to Ron. Ron's listening to KSAC in Davis, California. What do you think, Ron? Do we control it all?
No, of course not. And the Christian is, I've done a little study with brain neurology. Actually, he's terrified of liberals. And it's a kind of a feeling of pity towards him. Sorry, Christian. And I really don't have any anger because your limbic system is firing, but your reasoning, you're just rationalizing everything, son. So that's all I have to say to Christian. He's, you know, he's in trouble psychologically, and it's going to take a lot of guts to clean it out.
Well, it just it sounds like you know, this is not just a kind of off the top of your head answer. Flesh it out a little.
Well, I've been reading a book called, and I do want to give you just a couple of things on religion too. I've just finished the book, taking about 45 pages of notes, called "The Political Brain" by Drew Weston.
Okay.
Fascinating. I really recommend it, Peter, for all of us on the left and beyond. I'm so far to the left that forget about it. I lived through the 60s and all that.
I'm farther to the left than you.
I bet you're not.
I am. Go ahead.
Anyway, this guy goes into neurology, and they do a tremendous amount of studies, and he's got endless sources and teams of neurologists and so forth. And they actually will do PET scans, or they'll take saliva swabs, or they'll do several things and put people in stress situations, and they'll rationalize their way out of a situation where in their limbic system, which is unconscious at times, like namely the amygdala, that's one of the parts, is just flaring, but they're rationalizing everything to death. So they sound reasonable.
Yeah.
And they sound like when Christian said, I'm not afraid of the liberal agenda. I mean, the odds are 100 to 1 that he is absolutely terrified and doesn't know what to do with it.
Sure. I think that,
you know, so I don't want to say, Chris, you've been drinking too much Kool-Aid, but he's got a lot of work to do if he really wants to come to a level of, you know, reality about himself.
Right. Well, fear is an important component in the authoritarian mind. They're afraid of almost everything, and that's why they like they like to be submerged in these hierarchies where they feel secure. Tell me about religion quickly.
Real quickly is that who wants to get into government, of course, is the wacky Christian right. It's not Hindus or Buddhists or Catholics. It's just people who are already just... They're also having trouble with their limbic system and don't understand it. Oh, no, I'm serious.
No, I love it. But, Ron, let me get another call because I got just one more.
All right, one quick thing.
Yeah.
Jamie Raskin said, you put your hand on the Bible to uphold the Constitution. You do not put your hand on the Constitution to uphold the Bible.
Thank you, Ron.
Right.
Good point. Right. All right. I think we got time for another, at least before our guest, but still hold on with us. Here's Greg listening to KSAC in Sacramento. It's Peter Werbe on the Mike Malloy Show. Go ahead. Tell me quick.
Yeah. I just wanted to ask what that guy was smoking. You know,
they don't smoke that stuff.
Well, I wish you would have challenged him. That's what I was kind of perturbed at you when you were on for Mike before. You didn't challenge some other brain dead.
I know. I've heard that before. Guess what happens when I don't? Guess what happens?
What?
You do. Ron does. Or, you know, and Jake, who's waiting, and Edie. Come on. Let's share the miserable task that we have to confront these people that are so, whose brains are parked so far away from reality.
Academia was part of the far left agenda.
Well, they think that's it. We control. I mean, the official liberal ideology of tolerance and you know something that they're real short on. That's what they consider to be you know things like diversity. All right, I got to take a break. So thank you, Greg. Thanks for joining us. All right, we're going to be back with Annie Laurie Gaylor from the Freedom From Religion Foundation. And we're going to talk about the issue that I mentioned about universities installing foot baths. But in general, what about this wall between church and state that our founding fathers wanted? How much has it crumbled, and what's their organization all about? Peter Werbe on the Mike Malloy Show, and I'll be right back. Welcome back to the Mike Malloy Show. Peter Werbe with you on the Nova M Radio Network. If you want to call in while I interview our next guest, you're on next, 800-989-1480. Joining me from Madison, Wisconsin is Annie Laurie Gaylor. She's the co-president of the Freedom From Religion Foundation. Annie Laurie Gaylor, welcome to the Nova M Radio Network. Oh, you know what? Why do I keep forgetting this? I am the one that does the honors. There, you are on the air. Hi, Annie Laurie Gaylor.
Hi.
Yeah. I've only been doing radio for a few months, so I keep forgetting you got to press the buttons to get your guests on the air. Thank you for joining us. Did you see that article in the New York Times called yes. Universities Install Foot Bath?
Yes, I did.
And that's of particular interest to us here in the Detroit area because the University of Michigan at Dearborn is putting in a number of these foot washing sinks so Muslim students can wash them before prayer at $25,000 a crack. Yet this is something that concerns everyone that wants to maintain the constitutional prohibition against establishment of religion. What's the feeling of your organization?
It's a pretty new kind of issue and violation, and we are sort of watching and waiting. We've gotten a lot of complaints, not just about this particular incident, but about what's going on at airports. Similar foot baths are being installed at airports, and it's expensive. But I think that when you read the New York Times article, it's a mixed bag because there are problems because Muslim students are washing their feet in sinks and the sinks are tearing out and janitors are coming in and finding water all over the floor. So it's not just, a religious thing. It may be for health reasons, make sure that people aren't slipping on the floor. But, you know, it does beg this question of it's kind of shows some of the problems with religion.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's hard for me to believe that someone putting their foot up on a sink is going to tear it away from the walls. And also, one of the arguments is that this is, in a sense, non-denominational, that anyone could use the foot baths. But obviously, it was engendered by the need of a particular religious community. I said in I don't know if you were able to hear the show on the internet, but we were talking about the public square and conservative religious conservatives say that people like you, Annie Laurie Gaylor, and the Freedom From Religion Foundation and me are trying to drive religion out of the public square. And I say, indeed, that it has no place there whatsoever.
That's right. It certainly does not belong on government property, on public property. If this were a star and crescent, or a cross, it would be very clear-cut. But I think that we're going to have to see how it evolves. And I think that the university has thought this through because they're not using public money per se. They're using student segregated fees. And that gets trickier in litigation.
Mm-hmm.
So, I don't think it's a case we'll be taking tomorrow. But I think that we're going to have more problems as Muslims demand the same kind of accommodations, in a sense, that Christians are getting.
Which is large.
There are.
Yeah.
I mean, many school districts all over the country still close for Easter. They time spring break for Easter. They close on Good Friday, although we've been able to stop that in some places, including the state of Wisconsin.
Well, wait a minute. Now, you're going to be seen literally as the Grinch that stole the Christmas. You better be thinking about replacing it with some secular holiday. I had a friend of mine said he would take Hitler's birthday off if it was celebrated as a legal holiday.
Well, Easter is on a Sunday.
Right.
So, actually, the government has no business closing schools to celebrate Easter. And there's been a common violation that schools and government offices in many states will close on the afternoon of Good Friday.
Mm-hmm.
And that is not a holiday that anybody can construe as something all of us can enjoy. That is supposed to be marking the death of the Christian Savior. And there's not even any bunnies about it. You know, there's no Easter eggs on that day. So that's a very, very clear-cut violation that we have been able to stop in the state of Wisconsin, which called it a public holiday and said people had to actually worship between particular hours. That's a very clear-cut violation. In terms of replacing something like Christmas, I mean, we're not going to take a case about December 25th being declared a national holiday because it won't go anywhere these days. It would be silly to take that before the Supreme Court. But I would point out that Congress, in designating this as a national holiday, I think it was in the 1800s, did not call it Christmas. They simply chose the date, December 25th. So that's something. But, of course, this winter solstice is what people are celebrating at Christmas time. They just don't realize it. The Christians stole Christmas, and we don't need to replace it with anything except the fact that it is a natural holiday. It's the occasion of the shortest and darkest day of the year, and it has been celebrated with lights and gift-giving festivals for a millennia in the Northern Hemisphere.
Well, you mentioned, Annie Laurie Gaylor, that the Freedom From Religion Foundation picked the cases, the litigation, which isn't all of your work, a lot of educational work as well. I know your organization has a radio, weekly radio broadcast as well. But, for instance, wasn't it your organization that brought the suit against trying to get In God We Trust off the money?
We did bring that lawsuit in the 1990s, and actually Michael Newdow, who is the pledge guy who challenged Under God in the Pledge and has got that before the Ninth Circuit again. He's also got a case taking this in a different appellate district. We were not able to pursue it any further in the Tenth Circuit. We tried, and we were not given our day in court. But we think that it is certainly unconstitutional and has created a great deal of mischief because people now think that In God We Trust was always our national motto, and that it was always on our currency, and that is not at all true. It's a Johnny-come-lately, very much so.
And as with the pledge as well. That was
and the pledge. It's a 1950s violation. Although God worked its way on the money first at the end of the Civil War, and it was an indirect response to a clergyman petitioning the War Department, and it got on one coin. And then gradually was put on all the coins until by the 1950s it was on all the coins, but it was not on the dollar bills. And at the Freedom From Religion Foundation National Conventions, and we have our 30th coming up in October, we have a drawing for what we call clean money, which is pre-In God We Trust. And there's a great deal of it circulating. And we give a $100 grand prize in the drawing, but we have $50 20s, 5s, 2s, and 1s, and they have value beyond their face value in that they can prove to people who think it's always been on the money, no, this is a new thing.
Now, what's interesting about the Pledge of Allegiance was that it was written actually by a Christian minister. He could have considered himself a Christian socialist, but he did not put anything about God in it. And then, as you said, it was inserted in the 1950s. I think that that they wanted to make sure that we were distinguished from the godless communists, right?
That's right, and it's in the record. And Michael Newdow did a very excellent job of documenting all the religious intention behind the bill, in the wording of the bill, in the measure that Eisenhower signed. They talk about, you know, promoting God to school mm-hmm. children. So he should have won that case. You know, he lost it on the standing question, but he's back in court. And he's done a terrific job of educating the nation about the fact that, again, many of us have forgotten that the pledge, as originally written and recited, was godless. In effect, more generations have recited a godless pledge than have recited this tinkered one.
Now, the Freedom From Religion Foundation, as you said, is going to have its 30th annual convention in October, and I might just show up. I've never
really?
Been to one. Yeah, because for one thing, that your organization is just growing by leaps and bounds. You have these $1,000 life members that are, I read this in your wonderful newspaper, Free Thought Today, that atheism, agnosticism, free thought is growing like it hasn't in the longest time. You must be very pleased.
We are. We have signed up more than 3,000 new members in less than a year. We grew by 800 during the two-week period that the Freedom From Religion Foundation got a lot of publicity last spring when oral arguments were heard before the U.S. Supreme Court in our challenge of President Bush's creation of the faith-based offices at the White House and cabinets. And, I mean, that was phenomenal. I practically paralyzed our little office.
Huh.
And it also paralyzed something like 10,000 other websites that were attached to we had the same provider. We had so many hits on the day of the oral arguments. So for about an hour and a half there, people were not able to get through. So it's been a really exciting time for free thought. It's not a good time for separation of church and state, but it certainly, paradoxically, we are seeing more and more people speaking up as atheists and agnostics, making known their dissent from religion, joining our group, but also we see things like, you know, Dawkins' best-selling book, The God Delusion, Christopher Hitchens chiming in, Sam Harris's several books on the bestseller list for several years. It's really been very exciting that people are waking up.
Well, that's good.
They're waking up to the dangers of religion, and also they're just getting tired of the fact that religionists have cornered the market. They have.
Well, it's up to the Freedom From Religion Foundation to do what it is doing, and people can find out all about it by going to ffrf.org. My guest has been Annie Laurie Gaylor, co-president of the organization, and you can find out more about it by going to their website. Annie Laurie, thanks for having joined me.
Well, thank you for having me as a guest, and it's been a delight.
I appreciate it. Thank you again.
Bye.
And if anybody would like to comment on any of this, please join us, 800-989-1480. Peter Werby on the Mike Malloy Show. I'll be right back. Welcome back to the Mike Malloy Show. Peter Werby sitting in for Mike on the Nova M Radio Network. Open lines, and we'll be open line for the rest of this hour and the coming hour, the final hour of the Mike Malloy Show. 800-989-1480. We just got off the phone as a guest with Annie Laurie Gaylor, the co-president of the Freedom From Religion Foundation, and we were talking about this latest trend of building these foot washing sinks for Muslim to wash their feet in, so they can pray five times a day. I don't care how many times people pray. You can pray in school. You know that. All you got to do is shut your eyes and pray to whatever invisible man you happen to think is important. You know. On one hand, maybe I shouldn't be real disparaging of religion. It's something I don't believe in. And I agree with the title, by the way, of Christopher Hitchens' book, who's going to be the guest speaker at the 30th Annual Convention in October of the Freedom From Religion Foundation. The subtitle, the title is God is Not Great, and it is How Religion Poisons Everything. But I know tons of good religious people of all faiths who work in the peace and social justice movement and are, in fact, extraordinarily key to it in the Detroit area. But you know how many times these people have tried to convert this atheist? Zero. Zero. They don't intrude on my emotional or philosophical space or spiritual space or whatever. They try to, if they do try to convert, they do it by good works, by the, there's a phrase for it, it's slipping my mind right now. In the 19th century, the labor movement and the socialists and the anarchists, they referred to these evangelists, there you go, evangelists as God pests, pest, you know, like a pest, God pest. And so the deal is, if you want to have religion in a secular society, go do it. Go worship, go pray, wash your feet five times a day, no times, wear little hats on your heads, wear these instruments of execution around your neck, do whatever. It's your deal. But don't try to make it everybody's deal. You can just kind of maintain it within your little sphere. Doesn't that sound like the way to go with it? All right, let's grab some calls right here. Here is Edie. Edie's listening on the Internet in Montgomery, Alabama, I assume. Edie?
Oh, hi, Peter. Am I on?
Hi, you're on the air, yep.
Okay, well, it's Christian still out there. I'd like him to know how happy I am with the liberal Democrats that have just rolled over for George and Gonzo again.
Yep.
Just to give them free rein to spy on us. And
well, yeah, it's going to be Gonzo who is going to decide who can be, and we can trust him because he's a very truthful and forthcoming guy, right, who can be wiretapped.
Well, the Democrats are starting to remind me of, remember Marshal Petain of France?
Yeah.
You know, had the Vichy government, thought he could climb into bed with Nazis and save his country, and just made Vichy and his name synonymous with traitors.
Well, it's 16 of them. I mean, in other words, the majority of Democrats remain in the resistance, although it seems to me they could have put those guys' feet to the fire a little and say, look, we need you not to do this.
I know, and I agree, and it's just pissing me off, you know, because it just happens too much.
It does. That's not what we voted for. Absolutely. Edie, thank you very much for joining me. We're going to go through these calls pretty quickly. Here's Jake in Arcata, California, listening to Kago. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Hey, Peter. How's it going?
Going great.
I'd like to respond to that banana Republican who called you earlier and tried to say, you know, that the branches of government are controlled by liberals, and he even included the Supreme Court, okay? You have a Supreme Court with a majority of five conservative Catholics. You got Roberts, Scalia, Alito, Thomas, and Kennedy. And they're all basically deciding to change the laws of this country, specifically Roe versus Wade, to overturn a woman's right to choose to satisfy their religious agenda.
Sure.
And, yeah. You know, it's very open. There's a, you know, an open pro-life religious political movement in this country that's been very dominant in the Republican Party for decades.
Hold on. I will not let you call them pro-life. Call them something else. Anti-choice.
Right.
Okay. All right. Go ahead.
So I don't want to use their language.
That's right.
But the fact is, they have been dominant in the Republican Party, and they have been able to impose their will politically and especially through the courts. And these nominations that the Democratic Party didn't stop. They didn't stop Alito. They had enough votes to filibuster Alito, and they didn't.
Yeah, they believed him. How come they believe? I mean, I don't think they even believe him. They just roll over for him. They don't want to look like obstructionists. They don't want to look like they're soft. They don't want to look everything. And where do they get portrayed like that? They get portrayed like that in the right-wing media, and somehow this network that has about 900,000 people watching it, Fox and the news, can pull the whip on him or pull the leash on him. I just don't get it. Thank you, Jeff. Or excuse me. Thank you. I've totally lost where I am.
Jake.
Jake, thank you so much. Appreciate it. We will go to Jeff right now. Jeff is listening to KPHX in Phoenix.
Yes. Hey. Hello.
Go ahead. You're on the air.
Hey. Yeah. Listen. I think it's the second time I heard you talking about those foot sinks of the Muslims.
Yeah.
The foot wash. But there's something that you need. This is not about. My call is not about separation of church and state. It's about the way that you present it. I think you need to let the public know that it is not the Muslims who are asking for these things at the airport or at the universities where they've been going for decades. It is the people who are non-Muslim who don't want them washing their feet in the sink. Because Muslims will wash their feet in the sink, a slop room, a janitor's basin, wherever. They don't care. It is the people who are not Muslim who don't want them doing that. They are the ones that's requesting things. Because the way you present it, it makes somebody who's listening think that it's Muslims asking to have this so they can pray five times and wash their feet. No, it is the non-Muslims.
All right, I'm looking. I'll look through the rest of this article. I appreciate that. I'll take a look and we'll report it at when we come back. All right, we are going to take our top of the hour break, head into our final hour. And speaking about anti-choice, and one thing we got to really be careful is not to use their language. The right wing has been able to command so much language, if you think about that. And they boot it up into the mainstream. The mainstream just repeats it back, right? Peter Werbe in for Mike Malloy on the Nova M Radio Network. Our call-in number is 800-989-1480. The anti-abortion movement, the anti-choice movement, I call it the compulsory pregnancy movement. I'm going to tell you about a wrinkle that'll just knock your socks off. We'll be back with it after these. If you're on hold, stay there, and we will get you on the air. No guests next hour. Welcome to the Mike Malloy Show on the Nova M Radio Network. I'm Peter Werbe, broadcasting from Detroit, sitting in for Mike as he and Kathy and Little Molly take a few days off. I'll be here tomorrow. Sam Cedar will be sitting in for Mike on Monday. Our call-in number, 800-989-1480, and we're all open line. No guests this hour, so it's just you and me. We were talking about tendency. What's the word I'm looking for? This trend, that's it, for universities to install foot baths to benefit Muslims who have to wash their feet before five times a day prayers. Some were washing their feet in sinks, and they said that some of the sinks were pulling away from the walls. And I think it was Jeff from Phoenix. He called in to say, hey, look, this wasn't the Muslims that were asking for it, that the universities themselves were doing it. We had a guest on from the Freedom From Religion Foundation, and she said this was just part of the way that that civil society accommodates religion, and in defiance of the First Amendment, which says Congress shall make no law respecting an establishment of religion. But here from the article, and Jeff's correct, nationwide more than a dozen universities have foot baths, many installed in new buildings, and they name them, including Eastern Michigan University in Ypsilanti, Michigan, just down the road from us here in Detroit. There was no outcry at Eastern Michigan. Even some Muslim students were surprised by the appearance of the foot bath. My sister told me about it, said Najla Malibari, a graduate student, and I said, no way. And they said, it's really convenient. But after a Muslim student at Minneapolis Community and Technical College slipped and hurt herself last fall while washing her feet in a sink, word got out that the college was considering installing a foot bath, and a local columnist accused the college of a double standard, stopping a campus cart from playing Christmas music, but taking a different attitude towards Islam. Let's see here. Here in Dearborn, the university called the foot baths a health and safety measure, not a religious decision. They said even lacrosse players might want to wash their feet. Or if you're going on a big date, I'm saying that. But there's a website here. They quote from this vile right-wing Ann Coulter wannabe blogger in Southfield, Michigan, who I'm not even going to mention her name. She says, forget about the constitutionality mandated separation of church and state, at least when it comes to mosque and state. And this woman is aerobophobic and Islamophobic and completely. But there's a couple of things here. I mean, all of a sudden you have a conservative actually protesting that separation of church and state is not being honored. When it comes to Christians, you don't hear a thing from her. But this is the deal. If you think about this, if all of this was out of the public square, if all of religious practices, if all of religious observations were private matters and done in one's home or in those places of worship, none of this would happen. But if you look around the world and think about all the, at best, the hard feelings, but also all the deaths and all of the conflicts based around religion, it's extraordinarily dangerous. We should have it out of the public square. We wouldn't have to deal with it, right? William writes into calltalkyes@yahoo.com. Did I hear correctly? It's $25,000 for one of those foot baths in a college? Yeah, at the University of Michigan at Dearborn, they have a number of them. If so, what are these things made out of? Mike Malloy, oh, I guess he mentioned this, felt that the foot baths would be peed in as soon as they were installed. Wow. All right. There's a lot of you want to talk about that. I want to bring up something about abortion, but let's go to some of our callers. Here's Joe listening on Kago in Brookings, Oregon. Joe, we haven't talked in a few years. How you doing, buddy?
No, I talked to you, well, maybe it was last year. I don't know. He filled in for Mike Malloy on Air America.
Okay, there you go.
Okay. Yeah, well, just to deviate from the subject, to talk about, you know, the thing with Barry Bonds, President Bush giving him a phone call, Nancy Pelosi calling Barry Bonds a hero, which is ridiculous. Nancy Pelosi should spend more time impeaching these bums, Bush and Cheney, out of the White House. She should quit getting in the way. She should quit spending so much time rooting for a freak baseball player on steroids like Barry Bonds.
Well, say Barry Bonds, making the assumption, as you do, that he did steroids, how many home runs do you think he would have hit had he not had that? I mean, I'll tell you, Joe, if you or I took steroids, we wouldn't hit 750 home runs. 700, what is it, 756?
Well, that's another thing is the shame about it. He didn't have to take steroids to be a great ball player. He already was a great ball player, which makes him even more pathetic, which makes him even more of a cheater, because he looked at Mark McGwire getting the home run record and he was jealous. And he was jealous of Mark McGwire and the Sammy Sosa, and they were getting the home run record, and he figured they were on steroids. And he would copy them.
Well, whatever happened to It's Just a Game? Thanks, Joe. Appreciate your call. Thanks for joining us at 800-989-1480. Let's see. Here is Clint. Clint is listening on the Internet in Florida. Thanks for joining us.
Hey, how you doing?
Doing great. Thanks.
I'm a Christian guy. And I'm not going to say I resent what you were saying. I think that your guest, anyway, I understand where she's coming from, but we have to separate our beliefs from our country. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And our founding fathers were wise in that respect.
Okay.
Our Lord, Jesus Christ, as a Christian, Jesus Christ, told us to go out and spread the gospel. But he was putting it on us each as an individual. He was not saying it's up to us to do it under threat of force. Let's put it that way.
Yeah. Okay.
Okay. So
but what I'm talking about is the political foundation of this country, where the founding fathers wisely knew that the conjuncture, the intertwining of religion and the political state was a terrible thing, because they had seen that.
Bad. Ooh, too bad, too bad.
Okay, so we agree.
I agree. Oh, absolutely.
I
agree that we should not accommodate anyone just because of their religion.
Okay, we agree.
As a state, it's not our job to accommodate someone just because of their beliefs. we should offer everyone a fair opportunity to succeed, but there's no reason for us to accommodate them just because they believe in any particular God.
Well, I agree with you completely. I don't. And in terms of proselytizing, if anybody wants to come up to me and say you should believe in Kali or Muhammad or Jesus or whoever, that's their right. My right to say, hey, look,
it's up to them to try to convince you to believe what they believe. It's up
they
to
can.
Them.
They can. But I'm just saying that let's keep it out of the public sphere.
Exactly. As a government, it's not the government's responsibility to proselytize.
We got it. Thank you, sir. Appreciate your call. Here is, where are we here? Here's Michael, KLSD in San Diego. Is it really KLSD? Wow. I'm having a flashback. Go ahead. You're on the air. That's
exactly right. I just wanted to mention, out here in San Diego, we have a thing called Blackwater West, which is an extension of Blackwater, which is the mercenary arm of the federal government, apparently. But here, the guy who is in charge of Blackwater, Eric Prince, is an evangelical, and he's one of those guys who, you know, believes in Armageddon and the end of the world, and I think he's working really hard to make it happen, and we're trying to prevent him from expanding his business into the West, where he might be able to take over the border. And I just wanted to call in and talk about it, because I haven't heard a lot about it on the radio, and since you're filling in for Mike Malloy, I thought it would be an appropriate subject for your program.
Well, yeah, Blackwater, the founder, is from Michigan. His father, what's his name, Prince, right?
Right.
His father invented, you know, the deal where you lift up your sun visor and you have a lit mirror? That's
right.
Where they got all their money as a supplier of that little device. And, yeah, they support every right-wing cause coming down the pike, including the right-wing candidate for governor in the last election. So they're trying to move it out. Hey, do this for me. I want to hear more about this, but I got to take a break right now. So, Michael, hold on, and I will be right back to you. In the meantime, some open lines for you if you'd like to call. 800-989-1480. Peter Werby on the Mike Malloy Show. It's the Nova M Radio Network. All right, welcome back to the Mike Malloy Show. Peter Werby here with you on the Nova M Radio Network, 800-989-1480. And let's go back to Michael in San Diego. And after that, I want to return to this thing about the universities installing foot baths for the benefit of Muslim students. Here, Michael, welcome. You're back on the air. So you were talking about Blackwater, the mercenary company, that is now expanding into the West. Your fear is that they're going to wind up to be guarding the border.
That's correct. Well, I think that the plan of the Bush administration is to outsource as much of the federal government as possible. And one of the things that we've been worried about is the border and watching the border. And Blackwater, with all its mercenaries and its recruiting of our military, is set up just to do that kind of work, and they want to use high tech, you know, night vision and radar and all kinds of stuff to set up, you know, the privatization of the Border Patrol.
Now, who's the we? When you say we, is this an organized group in San Diego?
Well, there's several groups actually. Some of them are environmental, and others are social. That we're all, you know, different, and we're working together trying to prevent this from coming to San Diego, because they're trying to build a 200-acre, basically a training camp, you know, and I would consider it even
you know, it's a military police training camp, but they're basically recruiting from our military. And San Diego is a big military town.
Sure, and they pay great wages too.
Oh, they pay absolutely outstanding. It's, you know, they're paying as $200,000 a year for their, you know, for people to go in and basically secure Iraq, the same as our soldiers, and do the same exact work as their soldiers. General Petraeus in Iraq uses Blackwater Security. He doesn't use special forces.
Right, right. And the incentives are just amazing how much is being spent now by the Army to try to get recruits in there. Well, keep us informed. You know, this is the government is slowly turning. What was that Roman where the Praetorian Guard? Wasn't that it? Where that
exactly.
Defend the emperor. And it's dangerous to democracy. Thank you, sir.
Especially when they're used within our country.
Gotcha. Thank you. Appreciate it. Bye now.
Bye-bye.
Let's see here. Back to this idea that universities are installing footbaths to benefit Muslims. Eric writes into calltalkyes@yahoo.com. It is wrong and illegal at a public university supported by all the taxpayers to provide any facility religious in nature. Furthermore, this footbath fountain is meant for Muslim men alone. Women and other students need not apply. He says, I rescued myself from religion years ago, and I'm glad of it. I, like you, know many people of different faiths. We have a don't ask, don't tell policy, which works for us. Well, I don't know this is true. Well, for one thing, anybody can go in this bathroom and use the, and that's their argument. They, you know, if you've got a big date, you want to wash your feet, you can do that. If you want to do it before praying, you can do that. So they're saying this is not inherently religious. And in terms of women being excluded, I don't know what the deal is with people's religion. I don't pay that much attention to it. But apparently at the Minneapolis Community Technical College, a Muslim student slipped and hurt herself last fall while washing her feet in a sink. And also, I read that earlier, it quoted, it said that Najla Malabari, a graduate student at Eastern Michigan University, said that she was, she said it's really convenient. So I guess it is open to women as well. I mean, that it would provide facilities for women as well. But, I mean, that's not the issue. The issue is take religion out of the public sphere and put it in the private sphere where it belongs. If you have a religion that makes that difficult, I don't know. I'm sorry about that. But we know the experience. We know the experience of religion in the public sphere, and it's always disastrous, and it always winds up to be discriminatory against it's one group that's on the outs. You can just look around the world today, let alone go back through history. Ed, who's listening in Davis Junction, Illinois, wrote into calltalkyes@yahoo.com. Thank you, Peter, for setting the record straight on the word pro-life, as if that word could make your lawn green. I've asked a so-called pro-lifer, how can you say pro-life yet blow up a clinic or not care for someone already living? Plus, how many children here in the U.S. are starving, and Bush plans to veto the children's health care? What a crock of bull spit, he says. Keep up the great work. Thank you for your guest from the Freedom From Religion Foundation. Yeah, I was saying earlier how the right wing has commanded. I once had a whole list of them. It's like anything, pro-life, right to work, special interest group. These are all code words, and yet the MSM, the mainstream media, adopts them, and then they become common coin. I said I was going to get to this issue about abortion, and I don't know. We've got a lot of people calling in about this issue about the footbath. So if you want to join us, it's 800-989-1480. It's a toll-free call, obviously. You know what I call the compulsory pregnancy movement. All right, let's move on. Here is, oh, I'm sorry. We're going to have to take a little break. Sean and Muhammad and Chuck, you stay right there. If others want to join them, get your opinion out nationwide, in fact, with the Internet worldwide. Give us a call, 800-989-1480. It's the Nova M Radio Network. I'm Peter Werbe on The Mike Malloy Show.
Yeah.
Welcome back to the Mike Malloy Show. Peter Werby sitting in for Mike, and we're talking about religion and religious practices in the public sphere, in the public square, as somehow these evangelicals has defined it. And my guest about an hour ago, Annie Laurie Gaylor, co-president of the Freedom From Religion Foundation. We were talking with her about the universities installing footbaths to benefit Muslims. But, you know, there is a lot of Islamophobia going on. And the real offenders is not the Muslims. So the real accommodations, and that's what is being talked about here, is accommodating religion in the public sphere. And the idea coming from the First Amendment to the Constitution about Congress shall make no law respecting an establishment of religion comes out of the experience of the founding fathers, that once you start intertwining the political state with religion, that a terrible situation accrues. They had all the experience they wanted in Europe, and they wisely knew that, and think about what has happened, it was certainly before, which they were able to see, but project that into the future with the kind of religious disputes and the murderous manner in which people of the same religion frequently, Protestants and Catholics, or Shias and Sunnis, and gee, I bet you could name all sorts of other people as well, that because, you know, you read this wrong, or that you are a little more inclined towards this figure within the religion. So, you know, we don't want them fighting it out at all, and sometimes they manage to fight it out even without the state being a part of it. But once you get a state on one side, that's really terrible. And I know you can say, well, you know, things aren't at that level, and people washing their feet, or you know, celebrating Christmas, it's not going to exactly bring down the political state. Well, the kind of repression that has been engendered in this country alone, culturally and politically, because of religion, is enormous over the 200 and whatever years that we've been a country. And we've had to fight against that. People that believe in the free exchange of ideas, of the democratic process, and all of that, we've always had to fight, particularly on the cultural level, of how we had to fight, of the book banning, the book burnings that have occurred in this country, the suppression of films, the fact that almost every big city in the United States had a film board that was forced on particular cities by the Catholic Church. Their index of banned books and what have you. The point where, was it the librarians, but they began this banned book week. Imagine that here in the United States. Pardon me. And you go to the First Amendment, which says that Congress shall make no law abridging the freedom of the press, yet you have this whole range of book titles that were suppressed, that were not allowed to be in libraries, that were people were arrested. Some of the great classics of literature. This is all based upon religion. So religious people, if they want to say themselves, you know, don't read James Joyce's Ulysses because it's an evil, vile book, or, you know, something like that, it's okay. I don't care. You know, let them, if people want to submit to that on their own, that's fine. But once they start employing the state as their enforcer, that's when things really get troublesome, to be sure. And that's what the Founding Fathers, you know, inveighed against in the First Amendment. In countries like, for instance, France, that kind of public display within schools of any religiosity, of any religion, is prohibited. And in Muslim countries like Turkey, you cannot, I don't want to say anything inaccurate, but I know that a woman wore a headscarf into the Turkish parliament and was expelled, because they too realize the dangers of a religious state. So, and it's the thin wedge. You say, well, you know, footbath, big deal, or, you know, Christmas carols, big deal. It turns out to be a big deal. Religion is really irrational. I mean, people, and before you get really angry at that, does it purport to operate on the rational level? Of course not. It's on the level of faith. You feel it, or you believe it. And if someone says to you, prove God exists, I mean, people do have a few proofs, but as soon as you take it over into the arena of rational proofs and the whole idea of a proposition and then proofs to support it, I mean, it can't be. Stephen Jay Gould said, you know, they're different realms. I mean, a debate, like I think I may debate a preacher about the existence of God, and I'm going to have him say, you know, resolve, God exists. Well, good luck to him, right? How in the world is he going to do that? Once he agrees, it's sort of a, don't tell him if you're in Detroit. Once you agree to the proposition that he thinks is true, but then he's got to use rational proof in an arena where those don't work for him. So we'll see. I'll keep you informed on that. Our number here is 800-989-1480. Peter Werby on the Mike Malloy Show. And here is Sean. Sean is listening to KPOJ in yep. Vancouver, Washington. Hi.
Hey, Peter. Do you mind if I take a second and go from the cultural to the economic?
Oh, God, yeah. Is the House of Cards collapsing?
I think so. They're already calling it the credit contagion. I don't know if you remember, Peter, but, you know, we had the SNL crisis in around 90. Then the peso bailout, then the Asian bailout. So the next time you hear, you know, conservatives talking about how much they hate government, well, you know, just mention how the government is always bailing out these huge hedge funds, like that long-term capital management back in 98.
Sure.
And now we've got this subprime mortgage crisis that's linked to all these hedge funds all over the world. And just today they're talking about, again, using these quasi-government organizations to bail out.
Are they? Because I thought Bush said, I mean, who, you know, when he's on his own, when he's unscripted, there's no telling mm-hmm. what he'll say. But I thought that he said, I was looking for the article where he said that that the government would not use its finances to bail out the, wait a minute, here, he said, here. He rejected any direct government aid to homeowners. Oh, to homeowners. Oh, okay.
Exactly.
There you go.
Oh, you know, there's such a double standard. If it came to bailing out the homeowners, you know, that'd be great. But, of course, what they're going to do is use, like, Fannie Mae or Freddie Mac to bail out these massive hedge funds. You know? I mean, it's just such a double standard. If you or I get in economic trouble, you know, nobody's coming along to help us out. But if these huge hedge funds get in trouble, well, government's right there. It's socialism for the rich, you know?
It is. Yeah, here, you get this language, too. Bush rejected any direct government aid to homeowners losing their homes to foreclosures. He said such people deserve enormous empathy. He means sympathy, but right. Whatever. And the government could help by encouraging refinancing
yeah.
and educating prospective home buyers about difficult mortgage terms. Maybe they should have that lesson given to the lenders. But you see, and I think, Sean, did you would agree with this, that they can be reckless because the price they pay is never real great. When we talk about billions lost in the savings and loan scandals of mm-hmm. the 80s, it's not like it just went away, got washed down the drain. All that money wound up in somebody's pocket.
Oh, that's absolutely right.
All right.
Yep.
All right. Thank you, sir.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Appreciate it. Ultimately, that may be the biggest question. All these, who knows? I mean, the stock market is still up 6% for the year, I guess. And some people have said this is just a correction. Well, I hope so. It would be, but think about the films. What century am I in? The videos that are shown on television of the floor of the New York Stock Exchange, the chaos that's there. That's the core trading center of the world economic system, or the United States economic system. Yeah, I mean, it is truly frightening. But sometimes House of Cards, I don't know, they hold up for a while. Let's see, here is Kristen is in Phoenix listening to KPHX. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi, me?
Yeah, you.
Hi. Well, gosh, you've covered so much. I get so just, yeah, I heard that President Bush talking about that he wouldn't bail out the homeowner. But wasn't his brother involved in that?
Savings and loan, yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, it seems to me that, I mean, everything, my God, my other line's ringing. I can't even believe that.
Well, you go get it, Kristen, and we'll talk another time. Let's see. Here's Darius listening to Sirius in Boston. Thanks for joining us.
Hello.
Hi, you're on the air. Go ahead.
Hey. I want to mention something about religion. And,
sure, please.
You know, I grew up in a place where it's every single religion, you know, that exists on the planet, and I don't even know why it's such an issue, you know, here. I don't think anybody ought to get any kind of a special treatment, regardless whatever religion it is. You know, I grew up Hindu. I went to Catholic school all my life, and I grew up in a Muslim community.
Ah, and well, you've covered them all.
Yeah,
the big,
yeah,
the
that's
big
the
ones.
Way I, you know, I, and I respect every single religion. You know, it, I, and I don't think anybody should come and get any, like the Muslim in Michigan getting this specially designed bathing sink or something to wash their feet or something.
Well, Darius, on the face of it, it's no real big deal. But what we
no,
talk,
it's not.
But on the face of it, I say. But what that begins to happen is opens the door to public financing of religion. I mean, Bush has already done that with these faith-based initiatives, which is a cynical, ploy to get votes essentially by funding these right-wing conservative religious groups, but also by trying to erode the Democratic base in the big cities by turning over money to African-American churches as well.
Oh, yeah, and also a bunch of crooks use that as a cover so that they won't pay taxes. That's what it is.
Sure.
And, and you know, I think also religion is a very private thing. It shouldn't be like, you know, I don't even believe that prayers ought to be performed in the parliament or the Senate, whatever you want to call it. It's a very private thing. I just want, see, when people get up in the morning, I don't think about religion, man, what I believe in. I think about how I'm going to pay my bill, my car insurance, traffic, the bridges, how I'm going to get to work safely.
The big dig, really? Whether that's the roof's going to collapse. Hey, Darius,
exactly.
I got to take a break. Thank you for joining us. Appreciate it. Got another segment left and some room for you if you'd like to join us. 800-989-1480. Is there a public role for religion? And if so, how come our founding fathers said, it don't belong here? Take it to the private sphere. Peter Werby in for Mike Malloy on the Nova M Radio Network. 800-989-1480. We'll be right back. All right, welcome back to our final segment of the Mike Malloy Show on the Nova M Radio Network. I'm Peter Werby. Maybe I should say that in the reverse order. I had somebody write me at calltalkyes@yahoo.com and said, I love the Peter Malloy Show. Sort of conjoined us, right? I might be able to get your call in at the last moment at 800-989-1480. Let's go to John. John's listening on Sirius Satellite Radio in Virginia. Hi, you're on the air. Go ahead.
Hey, this is John. Thanks for the show. Thanks for taking over.
Thanks.
I wanted to make one comment about this secular thing and just religion in general.
Sure,
it's
please.
It's a very contrasting country from everything that we've seen. I grew up in Greece in the 80s, 70s and 80s.
Okay.
And religion was all over the place. The state is literally sort of not pretending. They're just saying, you know, we're a Christian Orthodox state. In school, for example, from elementary school, middle school, high school, we had religion class. We had to say a prayer in the beginning every day, and everyone lined up and just did it. No one ever had a problem. We even went to school outings, like literally go to church on a school day with all the kids going to church as an outing. And one big difference is that all the other ethnic minorities were real minorities at that time. Like if you take the city that I grew up in,
uh-huh.
Way before, pre-World War II, it was, you know, there was a huge Jewish population there, right?
Yeah.
But during the time that I grew up, it was not, right? So it wasn't, no one brainwashed us, no one did anything wrong, and pretty much, like, if you think about it, the only thing that anyone really got out of it is religion is like one of the boring classes or whatever that you don't really care about, and everyone kind of knows, goes through the motions every day without thinking about it too much.
Well,
the only thing you really get out of it is, like, be nice to your fellow man,
Yeah, well, I think you're underestimating. I mean, that may have had that effect on you, and certainly people that are, you know, in Catholic schools and in other religious schools, and people that were born, you know, or went to school in the 50s and the 40s that had, you know, prayer forced upon them in the schools in the United States. They always say, oh, I was bored, I never did anything, I was thinking about the girl next to me, and what have you. But it may not be successful, but the attempt, of course, is to link a religious, not even justification, a religious bulwark for the political state, because it's all part and parcel, and it encourages obedience.
I agree with you, and I can tell you that the state agencies were a lot more secular than the schools. It's sort of a reflection of the church itself, and this is the Christian Orthodox Church having a lot of power there, mm-hmm. for legacy reasons, for like historical reasons, and ending up in a system that just lined up perfectly, so there weren't a lot of issues. Now that they have huge millions of refugees from all sorts of, you know, and a lot of them are Muslim, there's all sorts of problems, because obviously you don't want to send your kids to public school and have them follow this other thing, right? So, of course, the kid can just refuse, you know, and we could have done that too. And you wouldn't have gotten in trouble because if you refused the sort of the religious thing, you refused to take it in, you would have gotten in trouble because you just didn't do what everyone else did. So the intonation that you're talking about is definitely there, but there are certain circumstances where it works out, and in certain societies, it can stand within itself, and people can take in mostly the good of what's going on without a sort of subliminal. I shouldn't say subliminal. It's a bad word.
I got you. Well, let me get another caller. We're almost out of time.
Hey, thanks a lot.
Thank you for your experience, John. I appreciate it. Let's go to Troy. Troy is listening to our show on KLSD in San Diego. Hi, you're on the air.
Oh, hi, Peter.
Hi.
Hi. This topic is dead on, man. It's dead on.
Why did it hit you? Why is this dead on?
Well, because I'm having a part 16 of a consistent dialogue with my single black mother who, in the last few years has turned evangelical. And, to the extent at which that she has actually betrayed, our democratic family values, and voted for Bush, and she knows how democratically active I am. She didn't even want to tell me that she voted for him because she knew I'd be giving her the business. It is all about the religion with her, and it really centers around this support for Israel. I don't get it. She's not even been to Israel.
Well, you know, there's a whole Christian evangelical support for Israel.
Exactly. I don't get it. And she's willing to denounce things that pertain to somebody like me who is a gay black male. I had actually originally wanted to call you because I wanted to ask you or your listeners for some support in what I can do to kind of explain to her what's going on. But you actually kind of helped me a little bit when you said, it's about when they use their views for the state to enact.
There you go. Troy, we're out of time, so we're going to have to maybe get at this another time. Yeah, a lot of times it's not a rational thing, as we were talking about earlier. And when you run up against somebody that you love and care about, I guess you just have to kind of ride with it. All right, thanks for being our last caller, and my apologies for those left on hold. Peter Werby, I'm going to sit in another night, tomorrow night, for Mike Malloy. Thanks to Ian Huff in our headquarters in Phoenix, and thanks for listening to the Nova M Radio Network. I'll be back tomorrow.